Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, coming up between 11:30 and 1 today, Moses Moody. Moses Moody is going to join us between 11:30 and 1. Fingers crossed. The great Raymond Ritter, president of communications, president of everything.
Did he put his name on it?
I don't know why, but he'll be on today. Moody will be on today. And we'll have him between 11:30 and 1.
People don't believe you.
No, they will. Anybody want to bet? No chance we get stiff twice in 2 days. I don't think so.
Well, that's going to put you in a different category. Say you show up twice and then you don't call.
Oh, yeah. That means on... If we don't get Moody today, we'll get Steph Thursday or Friday. That's the deal we're going to make.
This is Moses Moody, and you're listening to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right. We'll probably get pods.
All right.
There you go. You got him.
Let's go. Yeah. Let's go to Duck Sauce. Hey, Duck Sauce, what's going on in San Jose? How you doing, buddy?
Hey. Good. Steiny, Ev, my guys. I was on hold. You guys kind of made both my points, but I wanted to say, you know, Steiny's take on if he was a Doka not starting two bigs next game, I think he's spot on with that, because if a Doka does that, he's basically telling Kerr's got him right where he wants him, because he doesn't trust that he can beat him how they've been winning the whole season. And
right.
It reminds me a little bit of a We Believe scenario, you know, where Avery Johnson, the higher seed, started making adjustments to Don Nelson, and Nelson knew he had him at that point. He knew he had him. It was over.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying the series is over either, but, you know, if he does that, that kind of reminds me of that he's going down the same path. So I think Steiny was spot on with that. The other thing is, aside from the glaring shooting problem they have, and I love Amen Thompson. Like, I love his skill set, how hard he plays, but... You know, Van Fleet and Jalen Green, to me, like, the roster, they just don't have guys. I mean, to me, he has no feel for what his team needs him to do, you know, throughout the game. Like, it's that old saying, like, you got all the tools, but you don't got the keys to the toolbox. It's like, he has the skill set, but he's got no feel to me. You know, similar to how some people feel about Kuminga. So, you know, moving forward, like, for them, like, I mean, I love Şengün. As a player, but like, if you're going to build your team around Jalen Green, to me, you're in trouble. I'd trade that guy tomorrow. I mean, as soon as the season was over, like, if you could get high value for him. But anyway, man, to answer the other question about adjustments, to me, you keep the adjustments minimal for now, because you did win the game, and you won the game at a scoring pace that they thought was their advantage. You know what I mean? And yeah, they are going to shoot better. They can't shoot that bad again, but those are the glaring things to me. Thanks for the time, as always, guys.
All right, Duck Sauce, you have a good one, man. I mean, here's what I'll say about Green and Şengün. I actually think Şengün could be the guy that you could run stuff through. Maybe not now, because he's only 22, but I think eventually he's going to be a guy you can play through. As for Green, I'm willing to cut him a break, because he's 22, and what is he? He's an athlete. He's a scorer. He's 22. You gotta give him an opportunity to kind of grow into the position. And if the Rockets get beat in the first round by the Warriors, it'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason. Because I'm not sure. I mean, I would tinker, but I'm not sure I would do anything drastic. And that's kind of why I think we're gonna see the Rockets come out tomorrow like they came out Game one. I don't think we're gonna be watching the game saying, "Oh my God, look, they're doing all this stuff that's different." Because I don't know what they can do other than try to play the best game they can play using the style that they've used all year.
I mean, to be fair, they came out great in game one. I mean, they're up like 13-5. It wasn't, you know.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right. On audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
And then the Warriors did what they did, and they counterpunched. Like, it's one of the reasons why I felt like the Warriors had the upper hand in this series, because in many ways, this is a, I don't know if you want to call it a discovery series or a barometer series, but this is where Houston figures out if they have guys they want to build around for the future. They don't yet know, because in an ideal world, their two best players are Green and Şengün. And you're starting to find out that maybe one, perhaps both, I don't know, Şengün could fall off a cliff. I think he's pretty good, but you're starting to figure out that maybe those guys aren't the dudes to take you to the next level. Again, they're 22 years old, so they got a lot of time left. They're under contract. But there does appear to be something missing, particularly with Green right now, because the biggest weakness with the Houston Rockets is their backcourt. It's not just him. It's also VanVleet. And I like what Duck Sauce said. Neither of them really make their teammates better. I think that applies more so to Green. But because Jalen's also not really he doesn't fit what they do defensively either. Now, he's the guy that'll leak out and get you fast break points because he's quick and he can jump. But he's not really a defensive-minded player either. He's kind of a tweener. So I just feel like because the Warriors know exactly what they're getting from their best players and the Houston Rockets don't, that's automatically advantage Warriors.
Yeah. Let's go to 888-957-9570 is the number. We're asking Warrior fans what they expect tomorrow from the Houston Rockets and from their own squad. If you're the Golden State Warriors, how do you approach game two? Do you say, we'll approach it exactly like game one, but we'll play a little better? Or do you try to do something that may confuse the Rockets even more? I think it's too early to do that. I think the Warriors go play their game tomorrow and let the chips fall where they may. Let's go to Bobby in Los Altos. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, fellas, thanks for taking the call. Yeah. Get-in's always a good day when you're filling in. Nice to hear your voice.
Thanks, Bob.
I would like to talk about pace, but before that, can I shotgun a couple things? Because you've gone through quite a few things while I was on call. First of all, Kareem, it may not have been the most exciting shot, but I definitely feel it's more effective than a Steph 3. You know, Kareem may not make them all, but it was an indefensible shot, so I'm going to give that to Kareem. I would like to propose a JK free talk zone for 1 hour a day on your program, maybe like 10:30 to 11:30. No JK talk. I'd appreciate that. And then I'm simping a little too much, but I'm a big fan of Steven Adams. I think he's a gentle giant. The thought of an angry Steven Adams honestly terrifies me. I really think he should pursue professional wrestling when he retires. And then finally, Şengün. Maybe it's because, you know, obligatory stereotyping, a tall white guy. We got to call him Goofy. And, of course, his last name has Goon in it. But that guy, I'm telling you, next year he's going to be a top 15 player. In 2 years, he's going to be a top 7 player in the NBA. That guy is so skilled and he has such a great motor. I really appreciate him. That being said, pace. This is kind of what I feel like. Houston made too many mistakes, but it really was a Houston pace, I think, for game one. So I know we're old, but I feel like we need to make a greater effort to try to increase the pace. And, honestly, I'm not smart enough to know the difference between pace and score, but I feel like we need to make a concerted effort to try to get to 120, because there's no way Houston's going to make that many mistakes again. Or do we just let Şengün and Adams eat and just try to replay what we did game one? I feel like we need to increase the pace, and I know we're old, but I just think we have to outscore them. I know that sounds stupid, but you guys know what I mean. I think we need to really outscore them, like try to go like at a 120 pace versus like this under 100 pace. I'd appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Bobby. I thought you were going to say that a lower scoring game might be to the Warriors' advantage, and which you weren't, but I wonder what the what kind of pace the Rockets want to play at and what pace the Warriors want to play at. I think they can play at a bunch of different paces. But the Rockets, like the Rockets miss a lot of shots. They just do. And if they get a lot of offensive rebounds, then the ball's going to be in their court a fair amount of the time. I don't know. I mean, the Rockets are great. It's that old thing where the Rockets are great on the offensive glass. Okay, so what's the how do you combat that? Well, you got to leak out once in a while and hope the ball comes to you and maybe you get a couple easy ones. But you have to, if they start hurting you with a second shot, then you got to make an adjustment. But from Steve Kerr to Draymond Green, they all are saying it. We're going to get out rebounded in this series. Like they know that. And I think they're willing to live with losing the second chance battle as long as it doesn't get out of hand.
That's why I actually think, and I was wrong about this. I felt like a slower paced game would help the Rockets more than the Warriors. But watching game one, it's kind of clear to me that if there is a big adjustment the Rockets can make, it's just simply to try and speed them up. It's to play smaller. It's to play faster. It's to create a more like a higher possession game. And it's because you're right. The one thing that the Warriors cannot control would be the rebounding battle. That's going to be up to Houston, whether they get out rebounded or not, just because that's their strength. What the Warriors can control is how well they keep possession, how much poise and composure they show. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the one time the Warriors really were susceptible to a big Rockets run and things started to unravel, it wasn't after second chance points. It wasn't after 3-point makes. It was after three straight turnovers. A couple of them that were really bad, like Draymond trying to push after getting a rebound, the break, and throwing it right to Şengün. He gave it to Easton for an easy layup. Like, those are the kinds of things that can get the Rockets going. So I actually think that the Warriors may have learned a little bit. Like, that's why maybe they don't mind playing two bigs, because they don't mind playing slower against this team. It's different against other groups, but I do think that the Rockets are a squad that we're going to try and that we're going to see try to run a lot on Wednesday.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, always live on the free Odyssey app and now broadcasting from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. I mean, if you would ask the Warriors, well, what do you want to accomplish on defense? I think they would say, if we can get Houston to play in the half court and we can set up our defense, we will win this series. And I believe that too. On the other end, the Rockets defense, they can't, like, the Warriors defense is solid, but the Rockets defense has to get you out of rhythm. It has to turn you over. It has to get you playing faster than you want. And I really don't think they did a great job of that, of that on Sunday. And maybe that's something that we'll look and it'll be a little bit different. But at the end of the day, I do wonder whether the Rockets can score enough. 888-957-9570 is the number. You see any adjustments out there, Warrior fans? Or you come out? I mean, I'll be honest with
you. Like, what are both teams talking about today at practice? Like, what are they?
That's a good question.
I mean, what are they trying to do? It's the same way of phrasing the adjustments question. But seriously, like, Udoka and Kerr are both having practice. Well, Rockets might be done already, but the Warriors are having practice because we're going to get Moses Moody ideally sometime between 11:30 and 1 after they're done practicing. What are they going through? What are they talking about?
Well, yeah, and I think, and maybe this is taking the easy way out, but if I'm Udoka, I'm saying what we did on Sunday worked. We just couldn't score. And we were making our first playoff appearance. And maybe, like, Udoka clearly has a better sense than we do if his young players were feeling it a little bit. And if he knows that his young players were feeling it a little bit, then I don't think he's going to make big adjustments. Again, he's got, they won, what, 52 games?
Yeah.
With a certain way, and they improved a lot over last year. They're a really young team. I'd be shocked if we see something noticeably different from the Rockets. As for the Warriors, I kind of say ditto. I mean, if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm saying, look, we want to get into our half court defense because they can't score in the half court. And we rebound a little bit better. We keep taking care of the ball. Maybe we'll shoot it a little better and we're fine. So I anticipate a game that looks like Sunday, only I think the Rockets are going to amp it up a little bit, get more physical, push the envelope. I think we'll see Dylan Brooks, you know, revved up. I think we'll see some hard fouls early, and because that's kind of who the Rockets are, and it's kind of what Udoka is.
Yeah, in a way, like, game one was more of a feel-out game from Houston than anything. Like, I don't think they were as tenacious or, like, they didn't play the way I thought that they would.
I agree.
Like, and again, it's why I felt like the game two Sundays ago was kind of the game one where Houston, they punched the Warriors in the mouth on their home floor. And it was a little like they thought that the Warriors would just kind of, like, roll over. I don't know if they felt like they were soft or if they were older or they were a team that was just going to not lie down. They knew they were going to get a battle, but, like, they expected the Warriors, I think, to come out and feel them out a little bit. And that's where Houston, to me, is going to have to be different. And it might be someone like Dylan Brooks, who's got, along with Van Vliet, the most postseason experience on that team, doing something, to be honest, that's a little stupid. And that's where I would also be a bit worried, because it was game two in 2022 of the conference semis against Memphis when early in that game, Dylan Brooks hacked Gary Payton II going in mid-flight and broke his wrist. And it was something that was out of bounds. It was dirty. It was cheap. But it was the only way that Memphis felt like that they could get back into the series. I'm not saying he's going to try and hurt someone, but there's going to be something that happens in that first quarter, I believe.
I do too.
Where Houston's going to try and set a different tone than game one.
It's going to be chippy early, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
And that's the way the playoffs go. Not just the Houston Rockets against the Golden State Warriors. I mean, there's some patterns in the postseason that always play out. They just always play out. One is the first game where a team thinks they didn't get a good whistle, they will complain, and chances are they might see some results from their complaining.
I think they also thought that maybe the fact the referees didn't call a lot of fouls would benefit them. But yeah, in a way, I thought it helped the Warriors a little more because they were allowed to play their brand.
888-957-9570 is the number. Game two tomorrow night in Houston. And, I mean, this is as close to a must-win for the Rockets as it gets. You can't go down 0-2 and be coming back to the Chase Center. And that's another reason why, you know, I use the phrase hair on fire, but the Rockets are going to be coming out with their hair on fire. And the Warriors are going to have to, they're going to have to weather that early storm. I think we know that. But here's the other thing that the Warriors are doing that's, and this is where if you look at the whole series, I do think the Rockets really have a challenge to overcome. And it's the Warriors are packing the paint, but they're not. But when Jalen Green has the ball, it's not like they're in a zone. Somebody's trying to match up with him, you know, 30, 35 feet, Curry. And Curry's trying to keep him in front, obviously. But I'm telling you, I don't think the Warriors are hell-bent on keeping Green out of the lane. Because when he gets to the lane, it's crowded. And there's a sea of arms. And I think they're daring. Because what's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, he goes up and dunks for two. The worst thing that can happen is he kicks to a three-point shooter for three. But that's not really his game, and it's also not really Houston's game. So I think the Warriors are okay with, you know, Jalen Green kind of pushing and trying to be aggressive, because I think they think over the course of an entire game that he's not going to be able to make consistent enough good decisions to beat the Warriors in a 7-game series.
Well, he didn't in game one.
Right.
I mean, Houston was at their best when he wasn't on the floor. And that's a little damning, especially when it went from 23 down to, I think, seven with relative haste. Like Jalen Green wasn't in the game, and unless he figures out how to, and I don't know if it's more as a slasher, maybe it's getting in transition more. I don't really know what his role is in this series for Houston, because they need him to be their leading scorer.
Who, Jalen Green?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he that's just who he is. He's a guy that gets 20 a night for them, and he's been the catalyst to a lot of big offensive performances. When they're at their best offensively, it's because he's scoring the basketball. Şengün is obviously a gifted and talented low post player. He's probably more of a matchup issue for the Warriors because they struggle with centers that are skilled. But if Green's not going to average 20 a game in this series for Houston, I don't see how they're going to win. And he's off to a poor start.
Well, and that's the other thing. If he doesn't play well tomorrow, I'll just say shoot well. If he doesn't score, well, I'll say score. If he doesn't score tomorrow, that'll be five games in a row where he's had less than 7 points.
No impact.
Right. And that to me tells me there may be a bigger problem than just him in some kind of slump. I always believe when the season gets later, it just gets tougher and tougher. You play better and better teams, and they know how to defend Jalen Green. And you know what's the funny thing is? The Warriors aren't just giving him open shots. Like, I went back and looked, and Curry was getting a hand up. Now, there was no fear that Curry was going to block the shot. But if you look at some of Jalen Green's, and I'm thinking of 1-3 in particular that he created himself, I mean, Curry's right there. It wasn't a wide open three. And I think Curry's done a really good job. At least in game one, he did a good job on Jalen Green.
It's hard not to.
Well, at this point, I guess. All right, 888-957-9570 is the number. And game two tomorrow in Houston. What are the keys to tomorrow? This Rockets team's going to come out, and I'm telling you, they're gonna look like the team from two games ago. Not the team from Sunday. They just have to play harder. They have to play more aggressive. And that's what the Warriors got to prepare for. 888-957-9570 is the number. Download the free Odyssey app and check us out on YouTube and Twitch. Also, Warriors postseason coverage is brought to you by the Agape Golf Tournament on Monday, April 28th at Stone Tree Golf Club. It's presented by ATCO Pest Control. I'll be there with Guru, and we'll be broadcasting from 10 to 2. If you want to play, go to 957thegame.com and click on the events page to sign up. All proceeds benefit the North Bay and Golden Gate Regional Centers, as well as the San Francisco Autism Society of the Bay Area. What's coming up next on The Game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
This is Tim Roy, and you're listening to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Timmy! You can hear Tim Roy on the call tomorrow along with Tom Tolbert. 6:30 tip-off.
Playoffs!
By the way, his call of Curry's three in the corner or on the wing, whatever. Chris,
Easter miracle?
Miraculous on Easter. That's up there. That's up there, Timmy.
You know why it's pretty good? Because he just let it there. Tim's the best. There's no doubt about it. We may have to get into this one thing we talked about.
No. We will get into that one thing we talked about. Speaking of...
This has rocked me a little bit.
Belief, yeah.
And when I say rocked me, I mean surprised me.
That's what I do. Bit.
Yeah. Let's take Deborah and San Leandro. Let's talk about game two. Hey, Deborah.
Hey, Steiny. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
How are you guys today? Good, good. A couple of things. We were talking about whether or not we stick with what we've done or if we change it up a bit. I think what the plan they had was great. They executed. The defense was swarming, so we have to maintain that. The strategy was good. The main thing that they have to do is combat the offensive rebounding, right? They had 22, I think, offensive rebounds, something like that.
Yeah.
And then I was watching an interview with Draymond, and he was in the locker room. And sitting next to him, a little bit over with Moody, and the guy asked him, how far is the team going to go this year? And Draymond says, as far as Moses takes. And then the guy goes over to Moody and asks him, well, how far are you going to go? And Moody says, we're going all the way. So I hope that those two big shots that he made in that fourth quarter help elevate his game the second game, and all, because we need them to step up a little more. We'll be okay.
Thanks, Deborah. You're breaking up a little bit, but we got you. I mean, to me, you know, they're not going to ask Moody to take 14 shots and try to go 9 for 14. He's just got to be a threat.
We can ask him.
That's true.
Say, Moody, hey, you want to tell us the game plan? You're getting 25 shots up in game two?
Moses Moody today between 11:30 and 1. Swear to God. This time, it's for real.
Or yeah,
something like
I'll
that.
Lock it up.
Now, I didn't want to... At the risk of opening up a can of worms, Bobby in Los Altos, I was thinking about this. If ever there's a game for Jonathan Kuminga, I think it would be tomorrow. The Golden State Warriors are up 1-0. They've got a touch of house money. He hasn't played in 3 games. I'm just saying, tomorrow would be the night that I wouldn't be shocked if he plays. You can spoon feed him 6 minutes in the first half. He's not going to cost you the game in 6 minutes in the first half. But you do have wiggle room. And maybe tomorrow is kind of the last gasp for Jonathan to try to weasel back into the rotation. See, you guys think I'm not an optimist, but I do think positively.
You're Dylan Brooks.
What?
You broke the code.
I said
we wouldn't talk about him until he played. You broke the code. Actually, but...
My bad.
Well, for basketball purposes...
Oh my God, look at the phone lines lighting up. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's a lightning rod. No, I actually think for basketball reasons, I don't see him playing tomorrow. And
all right.
This is it. Like, tomorrow's not a must-win game or for the Warriors. But if you win tomorrow, the series is over.
And you can play him in game 3.
Exactly. No, seriously, though. If you win tomorrow, all you have to do is get one game at home, and you're in a position to basically cakewalk into the second round. That's why you can't play him, because Kerr has set a precedent of JK now in essentially what are must-win games. Clippers, you felt like that was a must-win because it punches your ticket to the top 6. Obviously, the play-in game 7-8 is a must-win game. And game 1, in a way, looking back on it, is a must-win to dictate the tone or tenor of the series. I think this game is not as much of a must-win as those. But you have a chance to end the series effectively if you win tomorrow. That's why he doesn't play to me. And I think the Warriors and their veterans are smart enough to know that. Maybe Pajemski, and we'll talk to Moody in a little bit. You know, this is their first real taste of the postseason as starters. But Curry, Butler, and Draymond understand how important it is to get through tomorrow, because what has been a consistent theme of all of their deep postseason runs, finals wins, or losses, it's finishing off teams early, doing it quick, not playing with your food, winning series in 5 or 6. And if they do that tomorrow, if they win tomorrow, they have a chance to do that.
Well, and that's the way I look at this game. And I think it's kind of interesting that, okay, so it's game 2. You've already taken, and I'm sorry, this is just the nature of the playoffs. The road team won game 1. Whether you like it or not, tomorrow night, the Warriors cannot put themselves in a mindset that they're down 0-1. You just can't do it. The Warriors are up 1-0, and Houston is going to be ridiculously desperate. And the Warriors, I'm not saying they don't want to win the game or they can't win the game, but There's a psychological component in these games. And sometimes it's tough for the team that wins game one to have that same motivation to win a game two after a game one. However, there's another aspect of this that flies in the face of that, and it's what you brought up. It's that this particular version of the Warriors, they probably know the sooner they get done with a series, like you said, the better. And if they can win tomorrow, it sets up a 4 or 5 game series. And then we're looking at maybe a week, especially if Minnesota and LA go deep. Then the Warriors will get to come into that second round, having rested for maybe 6, 7 days. And maybe that's their motivation. But I was just thinking about that. I think ordinarily I would be loving Houston tomorrow. And they are favored. But there is something about the Warriors probably knowing they want to get the most rest they possibly can between series.
Yeah, look, I mean, both teams tomorrow have urgency in different ways. The Warriors want to wrap it up as quick as possible, and the Rockets obviously do not want to go down 2-0 going on the road. That's why I think that we're going to see a similar game to game one. It's going to be a rock fight, and the Rockets are praying they make more shots. The Warriors are hoping that they take care of the ball and gain rebound as much as they had to and as well as they did in game one. Like, you know, I think it's interesting because we're talking about adjustments. And I'm watching some of the other series. The best one to me is the one we saw last night, Denver-LA.
Right.
There weren't really that many adjustments from either team between game one and game two. Now, granted, that was an overtime two-point game that the Nuggets won at home. But last night, if you go and look at the amount of minutes played by each of the Clippers, same rotation. One guy on the bench might have, Bogdanovich played a little bit more than did in game one. Simmons played a little less than game one. But for the most part, Ty Lue is like, we lost an OT winner, could have had that game. We're not doing anything differently. And we're going to put it in the hands of our best players and they're going to make plays, which obviously Kawhi Leonard did. Houston doesn't have a Kawhi Leonard, but they're going to ride in on the same horse that they did in the postseason. That's going to be their young guys. And so the Warriors got to do the same thing, I think.
Yeah. 888-957-9570 is the number. Game two tomorrow night in Houston. Can the Warriors go up 2-0 against the Houston Rockets coming back to Chase Center for games on Saturday and Monday? And you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have even said it because I'm getting a lot of mixed reactions.
Well, it happens. No, there's something later we will talk about that should generate mixed reactions. And it doesn't have to do with JK.
No, it has nothing to do with JK. He might not have even been born.
That's a good point. We got to go down memory lane.
Yeah. Let's go to Vince in San Francisco. Hey, Vince, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
You were talking about adjustments. I don't think there really is too many. I don't think you have to make an adjustment until they force you to. That being said, I am worried a little bit about the refs. You kind of mentioned it. Like, you don't know what kind of game they're going to call. And you just watch all the game one highlights of the guys just hugging Steph, grabbing Steph. Literally, if one play, Jalen Green wraps him up with both arms like he's a football player and then lets him go and there's no call. I just don't understand how a superstar Steph's magnitude doesn't get anything like that. But LeBron can be driving. Nobody's near him. He throws his head back. It's damn near a flagrant, too. The other thing is I want them to take advantage of all the face guarding and the squinting.
And the top blocking?
I'm not calling it top blocking. I hate that. I'm just face guarding. You know, like, I feel like if you can screen the screener, you set a screen with Jimmy for Steph, right? You kick the ball to the wing, set a screen for Steph with Jimmy. Can you roll? Before he rolls, you got Quentin Post who can pick and pop. He sets another three in for Jimmy. I think because there's always contest in there and they're squinting, it can cause confusion. You either get an open look under the rim or you hit Post for a three or, you know, make something happen. And then the last thing is just stop taking your foot off the gas. It's playoff. Like, go take these guys' spirits away. Go take their soul. You let a team hang around. You always worry about them coming back winning, and now you've given the other team confidence.
Good stuff, Vince.
Gotcha.
The easiest way to get open is to set a pick for somebody else. And Curry does it better than anybody. You know, I'll tell you what. I've been thinking about this. They say John Stockton was the best point guard screener of all time. Like, he would take...
I'll take your word
for
it.
...the hit. Stockton was... He would set a pick, and he would pay the price, and guys would try to knock him over. Curry's not that dissimilar. Not as physical as Stockton, but you set a pick for a guy, I'm telling you, it gets you open.
Can we put the holding thing to bed?
Yeah, I didn't respond.
He just went 12 for 19.
By the way.
Getting quote-unquote held. Like, I'm sorry, you can grab him, you can shove him, you can do whatever you want, and it may not generate a whistle. Curry's going to be playing his 149th playoff game on Wednesday. You don't think that he's seen everything? He's won four titles. He's won multiple MVPs. He's one of the greatest players to ever play basketball. It does not matter whether an opposing team grabs him or not. If he makes shots, the Warriors will win. If he misses shots, the Warriors probably won't win. The defense that Houston plays, that every other team has tried to throw at Curry throughout his career, it can only do so much. And I think you saw that again in Game 1 on Sunday. Just leave it. Leave the grabbing alone.
So I had the temerity.
It's a big word.
I'm not suggesting anything. I don't suggest. I'm not coaching. But to my way of thinking, I was thinking tomorrow might be Kuminga's last chance to play. I'm not going to Kuminga. Just trust me. Trust me. And there's a lot of people here. Kerr has iced out JK. He's never playing another game for the Warriors. Come on, Steiny. Kerr wants to have a stranglehold in the series, so Kuminga will definitely not play. Okay. Let me take you back to a year I can't remember exactly. But the Warriors were playing the Portland Trailblazers. And it was game one of one of those series that they kicked the Blazers' ass. I can't keep them all straight. And Steph Curry was hurt. And I'll never forget this. We had a caller call in and say, you know, everybody's talking, should he play? Should he not play? Because he was coming off injury. And we had a caller that day say, what about if the Warriors would sit Curry for the first half and then bring him back in the second half so as to keep his minutes down and go about it that way? So he doesn't play in the first half, and then he starts in the second half. And I'm here thinking, okay, all right, be nice to this person. Be nice, because they'll never do that. And I just said, yeah, you know, that's, I don't know, man. That's something that it doesn't happen a lot. It happened. It happened. He didn't play the first half. He played the second half, and he played in the overtime. And that's the game where he was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Do you remember that? You probably don't.
No, I do.
You weren't here. Oh, you do remember.
It's in 2016.
Exactly. What's your point?
I was at the game.
See?
It was in Portland.
Yes, that's right.
Which is why I hate to do this, but Guru doesn't get a chance to do it often enough. You misremember just about every detail of the story you just told.
No chance.
It's like the time when you went to court and you said you saw someone not get hit when they got hit. Curry, number one, came off the bench in that game.
Exactly.
He played in the first half.
Nah, I didn't.
13 minutes of that game.
Oh, because Livingston got thrown out.
For the first time in his career, Sean Livingston got ejected. And that's why Steph ended up playing 36 minutes between the first, second half, and overtime.
How many did he play in the first half?
13 minutes.
Yeah, see.
And then he had to play more. And then he had to score more. By the way, he didn't hit like his first shot, it felt like, until 7 minutes left in the second. He ended up going for 40. He pulled Mo Harkless out on the island. Mo Harmless, some of the Portland Trailblazers fan call.
Oh, I love that.
Al-Farouq Aminu, Big Chief, come get some. I mean, it really didn't matter who was guarding him that night, because he also set a playoff record, Steiny, which I'm sure, you know.
This is all hurts.
17 in overtime.
Why did he only play 13 minutes in the first half?
Because it was his first game back in the series, which was game four. Not game one, game four. It was 2-1 going back to Portland, or in game four. And Harrison Barnes, by the way, hit the biggest shot of that game. Three-pointer to send it to OT. Not a lot of people remember that either. So, I was at the game.
Shut up, Evan.
I was a Warriors fan working in Portland. It's probably the greatest game I've ever seen with my own two eyes in person.
You know what? You put me in my place. You've done something. Like, Guru wouldn't have remembered that and would have let it slide.
Well, I wouldn't have remembered it either if I wasn't there.
Well, let's...
He had a horrible first
half. The only thing missing, and go ahead and do it. Why don't you just give me the night-night?
Night-night.
Just give me the night-night. Anyway, shut I still up, think Kuminga could possibly play tomorrow.
Well, he could. Yeah, I was going to say that game really has no bearing on this one. So, I don't know. I also think Kerr's a man of his word. Like, if he's out of the rotation, he's out of the rotation. And so the Rockets force him to do something different.
I got to love the YouTube chat.
Oh, boy.
Steiny, take a lap. Mark the tape, Steiny wrong. Give Steiny the little T. Go back to New York, Steinmetz. You feel free. That was diabolical, Evan. Oh, thank you, Patrick McCaw fan club.
Well, it's like, I know you don't make March Madness brackets, but that's a moment where, like, in a lot of the brackets that I play with my friends, there's a reward when you come in last. When you get every pick wrong. And that's where it was impressive. Yeah, and the 925 on our text line, which you can remind the people of in a moment, that was the I'm here, I'm back game.
Yes.
Yes.
You can confirm that?
Yeah, it was great.
All right, if you say so, then take it to the bank.
It was unbelievable.
Oh, boy.
Because the discussion going into that game was, well, should they sit Steph?
That's what I remember.
Steph's not healthy. They're up 2-1. They don't need the game. And Steph comes back and Livingston somehow gets run. And then Curry just goes absolutely bonkers.
So here's the bottom line.
By the way, courtesy of the Boxer and Gerson work with injury attorneys text line.
By the way, so in other words, if that hothead Sean Livingston doesn't get thrown out, I might have been right.
The Blazers going to win that series. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's,
you know what? Let's mark that. Let's save it. And we'll play it for goo. Okay. And we'll say this is how we do it.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out. Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not God. By the way, Goo, we miss you.
Yeah, we hope he's got family stuff going on.
He does. So he does.
Leave him alone.
See. Go to Dave in Pleasanton. I'll let another. Keep going. What do you got to say?
No, so I just have a question for you guys.
I'm sorry?
I just have a quick question for you. If we had one game where Steph, where all the fouls were called on Steph when he's running around like crazy, I want to know what you guys think would happen score-wise. Because his whole career it's been like that, and it does amaze me that it doesn't get any better. So that's the question for you guys. What do you think would happen if he actually, all the fouls were called? That's it. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, I think he would have the exact same career that he's had. When they think it's a foul, they call it. When they don't think it's a foul, they don't. And by the way, this is one thing, and I always, remember when people say, Steph's the most poorly officiated superstar of all time.
He gets the worst whistle of any superstar in the history of basketball.
That's BS. That's BS. You know who got the worst whistle? Shaquille O'Neal got the worst whistle because he could have fouled out seven guys a game. Shaquille O'Neal got the worst star whistle of all time because he was so big.
If only he can make a free throw.
Well, you know, I saw something with Shaq the other day where...
The olive oil?
No.
So, last night on Inside the NBA, we got a couple minutes here. Apparently, Shaq has been taking a scoop of olive oil, which, you know, every day, like, there's reports that olive oil, it helps with, you know, heart health and other bodily functions, but it does make you have to go at inopportune times. And so, mid-segment last night after the Clippers Nuggets game, Shaq just inexplicably walked off the set. And Kenny tells everyone on national television that Shaq has been doing, I don't know if it's a challenge, but he's been eating a scoop of olive oil every single day, and he just got to go. He just has to go.
Ernie broke the code?
Ernie broke the code. No, and they just talked about the qualities of olive oil for about 5 minutes until Shaq got back. I've never seen it
home
before.
At night and just thinks, what am I doing?
I've never seen it before. He just took off. It'd be like if you in the middle of the segment were like, well, actually, you wouldn't say anything. You just got up and left.
707 saying wrong. It was Allen Iverson got the worst whistle ever. All right, we can agree to disagree. We're not talking about it. I know that. I'm not saying 888, and I've had the worst whistle of all time. I tell you what, we got Moses Moody coming up at any point in the next hour and 20 minutes, but we've been talking about something we've got to bring up. I was blown away, and it's making me rethink everything I thought I knew. 888-957-9570. What are you expecting in game two from both the Rockets and the Warriors? That segment brought to you by San Francisco International Airport. Shut up, Evan. Yeah.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.